You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I also want to shout out the Peacock and Williamson podcast. Brian Peacock and Matt Williamson do a great job over there covering everything in the National Football League. I also want to shout out the Locked On NFL podcast, of which I am a part. I go on there every Tuesday, co-host that show with Ross Jackson. He does Locked On Saints. I make fun of him all the time about Kyle Rudolph memories. And today was Vikings Day on the show on Tuesday. So go check that out. We previewed the Vikings, talked about the Carl Nassib news and some fantasy stuff. Go check that out. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL, and the show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. Today is Twitter Tuesday, which means I got a mailbag full of questions here, and I'm going to answer them for the entire show. But there's a couple of notes that I need to get to first. The first one is not very fun at all. It's actually pretty somber news. Jalen Twyman, rookie defensive tackle, had a run-in with a shooter of some sort in Washington, D.C. He got shot four times. This was somewhere around Monday evening-ish. And he is okay. He is going to make a full recovery. The wounds are all, quote, superficial, which means they didn't hit any bones, they didn't hit any organs. There's no major, like, life-threatening or critical damage. But that's still getting shot. So that's a wound that is going to take some time to heal. No idea what sort of availability Jalen Twyman will have, but for now we can just kind of be relieved that he is okay and he's expected to make a full recovery, as are the other two victims of this particular incident who also got shot, and they are also expected to survive. So there isn't really much else to say about that. As of this recording, I don't really know much else about it, and we'll keep you posted on what sort of timeline there is for a return to the field. As for what happened, why it happened, all that stuff, I'm not really interested in covering it. So you won't hear much about that from me, but I'll keep you posted on where Jalen Twyman is at in terms of his recovery. The other piece of news we have to talk about is a little bit more detail came out on Danielle Hunter's contract renegotiation and actually how it works. So what we've already known about it was that there was a signing bonus of $5.6 million he gets this year. That's money that was already on his deal that was unguaranteed, that is now converted into a signing bonus. So it's unguaranteed money he gets in his pocket, but no new money is created. And the roster bonus, the $18 million roster bonus, is also taken from money that was already in the deal. So the Vikings didn't promise Danielle Hunter another cent. They just moved money around in such a way that kind of turns 2022 into like an ultimatum year. And I think that's the kind of agreement that they came to that was basically to defer this. But now we know, we've learned from a very experienced NFL agent, Joel Corey does a podcast where he breaks some of this stuff down, that there are a couple of void years tacked on to the end of Danielle Hunter's contract, which I believe expires in 2023. Or after 2023, and now they've tacked on a couple of void years, so that $5.6 million will spread out a little bit thinner. So the Vikings save $4.48 million on the cap in 2021. Bunch of that goes to Sheldon Richardson, but they are now sitting with, call it 14, I think it's 14.8 is the numbers, somewhere around $14, $15 million in cap space for 2021. In spirit, it's really a deal that's meant to bring them back to the negotiating table next year, and they'll do that, and we'll kind of figure out what that is when that comes around. But for 2021, Danielle Hunter plays football, and we can all be happy about that. So, with those things out of the way, let's move on to the mailbag. And the first one I want to answer comes from Stizo, who asks, what do you think the impact will be on the NFL draft from this ruling from the Supreme Court related to the NCAA being anti-competitive? And he links a ruling from the Supreme Court that happened. A lot of football news coming in on Monday. But basically, there was a Supreme Court ruled on a case of the NCAA versus basically its players regarding like paying the players and all that stuff. And there are kind of other ways outside of scholarships that schools were paying their players by buying them, like their books for them or certain lab equipment and stuff like that. Really kind of small nickel and dime things that added up to a decent bonus. And the NCAA wanted to disallow that because they saw it as a way of paying the players outside of a scholarship and essentially bribing the players, paying the players. The NCAA doesn't want that. Supreme Court ruled unanimously that you actually do have to allow that, essentially on like antitrust grounds, and essentially saying that like you can't manipulate the market this way, and if this were any other industry it would be illegal. Pretty scathing opinions. I'll link all that stuff in the show notes. As it affects the NFL, though, its effect on the NFL, I think it's hard to say, because if it does, this is not the Supreme Court telling the NCAA they have to pay their players, but this is a big step toward that. And it's also a declaration that the Supreme Court's probably willing to hear a case about the NCAA paying its players. And it seems like they're eager to rule against the NCAA in that particular case as well. So if this is a step that leads to NCAA players getting paid, that changes the face of college football. That is massive news for college football. As it applies to the NFL and the draft, you probably get smaller draft classes on the whole for a couple of years as more kids decide to go back to school. But eventually all those kids graduate and head to the NFL, right? So it's just kind of delayed. So you will get more kids kind of heading back to school. You get more 5-year, 4-year players, less 3-year early declared kind of players. So players likely come out a little older, a little polished, and that, you know, will affect things in the draft. But it's hard to say, because I don't know what's going to change, if conferences are going to change, if, you know, certain schools become less viable because they can't pay, or if, you know, the way that teams that colleges recruit changes or something. All of that can have a huge effect on the NFL. I have no idea what it'll look like, so it's hard to answer that question right now. But it is definitely interesting to think about and keep an eye on, even if you don't watch college football. Daniel Chase, who definitely does not play for the Los Angeles Chargers, asks, you talk about the Vikings never doing a rebuild. Playoffs are always the goal. True. How does that impact financially? Does going on the road for a wild card game generate additional revenue for ownership? I'm guessing if they host, they see ticket sales as a minimum. So they do get a portion of, the road team gets a portion of the gate, which is like the ticket sales. I think it's like a 60-40 split in favor of the home team. But I mean, there's the big TV contract, right? And you don't need to be home or road to get the TV contract and the TV money. So it's not a huge revenue thing. Also, I would say, why are you assuming they're going to be on the road for the playoffs? You don't know. They're probably the NFC North favorite if Aaron Rodgers leaves in Green Bay. So maybe they play a home game. And on a more serious note, I mean, the goal is not to get a wild card spot. The goal is to win the division, of course. And they're trying to win the division. Hard to do that with, you know, one of the like greatest quarterbacks of all of the history of football across the St. Croix River. But I don't know where we get this idea that the Vikings are like planning to be the 5th or 6th seed and just be an also ran. Like, that's not the goal. It works. You get a playoff spot, you get a chance, you know, you're in the dance, and hey, you can be a wildcard team and win the Super Bowl. Just look at who just did that. But I don't imagine the Wilfs are going, yeah, that plan to just get wild card spots is fine because we get enough revenue. But hey, if you're like me and you think the Vikings have a better shot to win the North than they're getting credit for, maybe you want to lay a buck down on it, head on over to betonline.ag. They are +240 to win the NFC North. I actually think that's fair. They're +120 to make the playoffs. I think there's money to be made there. And their over under is at 8.5 wins. That means the betting market is unsure whether or not they will have a winning season at all. So hey, go, you know, 10-7 and just missed the playoffs, that nightmare scenario. If you bet the over, you still win your money there, just as much as if they're the one seed and they're, you know, 13-4 and they're perfect. So head on over to betonline.ag. Maybe you disagree with me on those things. You want to bet the other side of it, you can do that as well. You can set up an account for free if you don't already have one. And when you make your first deposit at BetOnline, enter promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, all one word, you get a 50% welcome bonus. It means if your first deposit is $500, you actually get $750 to gramble with just by entering the promo code LOCKEDON at betonline.ag. Your online sportsbook experts. Moving on with the mailbag, the next one comes from Sam, who says, how do you see the corner rotation playing out? Bashaud Breeland, Patrick Peterson, Cameron Dantzler, and Harrison Hand on the outside. Just on the outside, of course, Mackenzie Alexander takes the inside. I would say it's Peterson, Breeland, and Dantzler, and maybe Jeff Gladney works in there. Gladney will participate in camp, even if he's suspended. the only way he doesn't participate in camp is if he's just straight up released, which I think probably would have already happened, or if he's put on the commissioner's exempt list. I don't know how that works. There could be some other weird exceptions or something, but suspended players still participate in camp and still earn their place, and then when they come back, you know, they kind of get whatever that place was. So he might be part of the rotation depending on how much time he misses. But my guess would be that Peterson, Dantzler, and Breland all rotate kind of drive by drive. It might even be like a true like rotation, just, you know, different two guys every drive to keep all their legs fresh, and especially to keep Patrick Peterson's legs fresh since, you know, he's the old guy. Jameis Quitz asks, with the growing use of tight fronts and bare fronts in the NFL, will our offensive scheme need to change away from our zone heavy runs and play action to make up for it? If so, how? So that's a really interesting question, and I would imagine most offensive coordinators are asking that question too. So I think, yes, something will have to change. Some adjustment will have to be made. What that adjustment is, I am not nearly smart enough to know. I have absolutely no idea. But probably something needs to move around to kind of take advantage. What I think is teams like the Vikings or teams like the Titans that have dynamic running backs will say, okay, we'll run outside. You know, tight and bare fronts, if you missed all that, are basically fronts that load up the inner part of the field and dare teams to run outside, with the kind of caveat that, hey, outside runs are easier to defend than inside runs because you got to take a bunch of time to go east-west before you go north-south. So we would rather have you take an indirect path to the end zone and defend that. But if that indirect path to the end zone means a toss to Delvin Cook, yeah, we'll take that. So maybe we don't have to. Maybe it plays into our hand the way we want because you have, you know, a dynamic player in space that can kind of punish that. But if, you know, if your guy's Leonard Fournette, maybe not. James asks, as a British listener, it's vital that I ask, is it coming home? I have no idea what that means. So sure. Alexander FM asks, as a way too early prediction, who will be the Vikings 2021 rookie of the year? Probably Wyatt Davis. That's my too early prediction. If I wanted to get a really cheeky one, it'd be Patrick Jones. If I wanted to get really, because I think he can actually get himself into the rotation. I think he's close to being like a starting quality guy. He's not there yet, and that's why he goes in the third round and not in the first or second. But I think that his technique is, he's got, you know, three out of four pieces, and he just needs to learn that fourth one, and then it all unlocks. So if I wanted to be really bold, I would say Patrick Jones. But otherwise, it's probably one of the linemen, right? Wyatt Davis or Christian Darrisaw. And I think Davis has a better chance to win his position battle than Darrisaw does, which is as much a take of, you know, Rashad Hill being better than Dakota Dozier as it is a take of, you know, who is actually more pro-ready. And that isn't necessarily an indictment of, like, where they went in the draft, because there was, you know, injury stuff with Davis and positional value and all that stuff that's affecting that kind of that economy. Avril Chuhan asks, how does Clint Kubiak modernize this offense? Dude, it is already modern. If you look at what teams are bending over backwards to try to stop, it is the play action wide zone. It's the Titans and the Vikings, and it was Washington with Kirk Cousins, and it's the Rams, and it's going to be the Seahawks and the Lions. There are like 12 teams in the league that run this. Nothing is more of the moment and in fashion than the wide zone. Now, what you probably mean is that the Vikings run too much, and that is perceived as an old school thing. I think run-pass ratio is a bad way to determine if they are being forward-thinking or not, and I think you should expand your perspective. Dill asks, Jets Crowder, Jamison Crowder, is getting his contract restructured, will be less of a cap hit. Could he be a trade target for the Vikings? I would imagine if the Jets just restructured his contract, probably puts the kibosh on any trade talks. He restructure a contract so that he stays, not so that you can trade that better contract to someone else. Nietz asks, after doing some research on historical performances of rookie offensive linemen being asked to start week one and this coaching staff's track record of developing the position group, my question is, assuming Darrisaw and Davis both win their positional battles in camp, have the Vikings improved their offensive line with two rookies replacing Reef and Dozier? So very importantly, it got cheaper. And now I don't like cheaper and worse, but I would rather be, you know, cheaper and worse than the same price and worse, I guess. And that does kind of mitigate getting worse. Reef is a good tackle, so I don't think so. I mean, if Davis beats Dozier, obviously that means they, like, by its nature, that means that they improved at the guard position. If Darrisaw, like, there's a world where Darrisaw can beat Hill but not be as good as Reef. But I think they probably improved their long-term outlook because it was, I mean, Reef wasn't going to be around till he retired, right? And if he was, that was going to be expensive to do. So they probably improved their long-term outlook. And, you know, adding two rookies that start week one is absolutely a great thing for the offensive line. But just from, you know, Reef and Dozier, I mean, Reef is just such a better player than two rookies could be. But there's also a world where Darisaw is just awesome and rules and is way better than Reef. So it's possible. I would probably say no. But the margin is pretty thin, and they got cheaper and younger, and that's worth something too, I guess. Peter Larson says, which AFC North team do the Vikings match up best and worst against? And also said, don't say Cincinnati because that's boring. I think they match up pretty well against Cincinnati. I mean, just because Cincinnati's not great. I think they match up well against Pittsburgh, though, because the Vikings love to keep the ball in front of them. And that's all Pittsburgh has with Ben Roethlisberger. And not to mention, you know, Mackenzie Alexander was able to read him very, very well when he played Big Ben a couple times in Cincinnati. So I really like the matchup against the Steelers. I do not like at all the matchup against Lamar Jackson. That is a very strange run game. It's a mobile quarterback. It's always been a trouble for the Vikings. And, you know, they've got a bunch of deep burners, Hollywood Hill, Rashad Bateman, you know, guys that can really get behind the defense. It's just a scary team, and it's an awkward team to match up against, so I'm not a big fan of that. Ben Olson asks, what do the Vikings do with their $14.8 million of cap space they have remaining? Some of that has to go to some procedural stuff that just has to happen, signing your practice squad, you know, the only the top 51 count right now against that, and so that 14.8 doesn't include players 52 and 53 on the roster, whoever they may be. And then there's like contingency and stuff. So I would say they probably extend Brian O'Neill. That might add a little bit of an extra charge if there's a signing bonus or something. Extend Harrison Smith. That might create some cap space. It might just be like neutral. And then, I don't know, then you just have some contingency, but I wouldn't anticipate there being a huge move on the horizon. Dr. Doof asks, which young linebacker, not Kendricks or Barr, do you throw your chips in on standing out this year? Well, great time to do a Built Bar ad. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the planet. It tastes like a candy bar if you were looking for an indulgent treat that won't throw you off the wagon. If you're trying to stay in keto, but you're just craving chocolate cake, have a Built Bar. It tastes like all of these delicious treats. Peanut butter brownie, mint brownie, chocolate coconut, coconut almond, chocolate raspberry, all sorts of classic combinations. You can find them at builtbar.com. And make sure you check out the Built Bar website because they do all kinds of specialty flavors all the time. You don't want to miss out because those are the good ones. That's where you get like cookies and cream and raspberry cheesecake and all kinds of wild stuff. So head on over to builtbar.com, enter promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, and that'll get you 15% off your next order at builtbar.com. Next question comes from Trubisky's Burner, who asks, a Viking starter or role player who is underappreciated by the fans / media / etc. I am going to go with underappreciated by Vikings fans, because if I went the national angle, I'd just be complaining about how the Vikings don't get enough attention or whatever. That's dumb. Underrated by the Vikings fans. Kirk Cousins is both overrated and underrated, so he is underrated. He's just also overrated. I think Rashad Hill gets underrated a little bit. I think he has a much better job. We just had a question earlier about how Christian Darisaw, we assume he wins the job. I don't think we assume he wins the job at all. Even if he comes in and is ready and is playing like a decent rookie, there's a chance Rashad Hill actually has a chance to like earn an NFL starting job and be an NFL starting quality tackle. He hasn't quite shown us enough of that, but I thought he showed us some in that Tampa Bay game when he played like 30 snaps or whatever it was. And I definitely want to see him in the preseason because there's a chance that he's improved his footwork and therefore improved as a tackle and is a different player than the one we complained about incessantly in 2018. I think Garrett Bradbury gets way too much hate. Yeah, he gives up a pressure to a game, which is really bad for a center, so it puts him at the bottom of a bunch of PFF's list. I don't really care about that. It's like a pressure or two a game. You know, you got Dakota Dozier next to him giving up like eight. Like, I don't really care about Bradbury's two. And he is an excellent run blocker. Like, not just like a good-ish run. No, he's like unbelievable to the point where you can design plays that utilize his run blocking skill and make everybody else's job way easier, and that's uplifting the players around you. And I think in the run he has that effect. To a similar end, Forrester asked, who is the most overrated player on the Vikings? And I think when it comes to like overrated by the fans, sorry, buddy, it's Kellen Mond. People think he's going to come in and start like week six if Kirk throws too many interceptions. He's not going to be ready for like 2 years. He has so much work to do before he is a ready NFL quarterback. And if he can do that work, then he can get there. And maybe he's earlier than I think. But it's going to be a while, and he might not ever get there. Like right now, I think he might be closer to quarterback three than quarterback one. And I know people don't want to hear that, but it's also important that we got to have patience with Kellen Mond and not expect him to be ready by week six of his rookie year. It's just not the kind of quarterback he is. I would also maybe say Brian O'Neill. I think Brian O'Neill is really good. I actually just did an article about it. Like, he's good. Extend him, like totally extend him, and he's good. But I don't think he's like the Pro Bowl level tackle that people kind of make him out to be. And I he should be the starter, but he's like an average starter, and that's okay. And maybe you can try to improve upon it again later when he's average and he's too expensive to be average. That's probably where we're going to be soon. And right now he's a little bit too much of a hero, if you ask me. Cheesy asks, if we don't make a deep playoff run this year, is it time to enter a rebuild? Never, never, ever just enter a rebuild because you didn't make a deep playoff run. Enter a rebuild because your roster's a mess. If you're the Texans, tear that apart and enter a rebuild. If you have, you know, like the Browns a few years ago when they did their tank in like 2016 and they had like four different GMs who did four different drafts with four different philosophies and nothing went together and they just scrapped the whole darn thing. That's when you enter a rebuild. I think, you know, and again, what does it mean to make a deep playoff run, right? If you get a bye and you win one playoff game, you get to the championship game, and you can pass that off as, well, they only won one playoff game. And that's the same as the 2019 Vikings, who were a 6 seed and won one playoff game. And nobody really gives that gives the Vikings too much credit for that season, which I think is wrong. And that does bring me to the final question, which comes from Arif Hassan, who asked, should first round byes be counted as playoff wins? This is such an interesting question, and I think the answer to it has to depend on what you're trying to accomplish. Because if you are trying to suss out the success of a season, I think yes. Because again, you don't want to mistake a season like 2017, where they won one playoff game, with a season like 2019, where they won one playoff game. The 2017 team was absolutely a more successful team than the 2019 team was. And with only one bye available now that there's a 7-team format, then I think that effect is even like more exacerbated. So if you're trying to just kind of say, was this a successful season? Well, they only won one playoff game. I think adding the bye as a kind of de facto win can be a useful way to apply context and not generate any false negatives. But if you're trying to figure out, hey, is this team good in the playoffs, in the different era of the playoffs, and if you're trying to kind of determine whether or not there's a difference between, you know, playoff success and regular season success, then you can't count bye weeks as auto wins, right? Because you're trying to examine how teams play in the playoff environment. If you're trying to look at, like, you know, the Marvin Lewis Bengals or try to find effects like that, obviously you can't look at, you know, first round byes that way. But I think there's something to be said if you're looking at like a coach's playoff record, like the Vikings under Mike Zimmer, 2-3 in the postseason, and that sounds really bad, but they didn't have to win a game to get to the second round of the playoffs. So if I'm looking at the success of a season, this is why I usually say if you got to the divisional round, you probably had a pretty good season. If you were the one seed, and even if you fail in the playoffs, you were the one seed, you were doing something right. And I think that is the most useful reason to ask this question, is to kind of determine the direction of the team. I mean, look at the team like a Packers. Let's say you're in the in a room with the Packers front office and stuff, and you're trying to figure out what to do with this Aaron Rodgers situation. And somebody says, well, they only won one playoff game with him. That doesn't make a lot of sense, right? That totally doesn't read. And it's because they had that bye. You should probably say, well, they had a bye and they won one playoff game. So counting a playoff game as a win can help in some contexts if you're trying to figure out, hey, should the Packers completely change direction? If you were in the Packers room, you'd have to be like, well, no, of course the Packers win. As Vikings fans, yes, please change the direction. Please trade Aaron Rodgers to the Broncos and go into a season with like Drew Locke and Jordan Love in a competition. Please do that. Please do it for me and my family. But like, we want them to do something different. And the 2020 Packers won as many playoff games as the 2019 Vikings. I think using byes as a way to differentiate those things can be wise, but don't apply it in every context. You know, the fact that the Cowboys haven't won a playoff game since however long it's been is definitely true, even though they got a first round bye. And I don't think saying, well, they got a first round bye will console a single Cowboys fan. So I think it works in some contexts. I think it works in the most useful context to do that. But obviously, be careful. I'll see y'all tomorrow. We'll talk. I think we're going to talk about Garrett Bradbury. I've been wanting to look into him for like weeks and weeks. And that made me kind of want to look at his run blocking and test out my hypothesis and see if he's truly as elite as I thought he was. So maybe I change my mind tomorrow. We'll see. I'll look at some tape. Sometime later in the week, we'll do that. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL and shows on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. Make sure you check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by the wonderful Peter Bukowski. Under 20 minutes every single morning going over everything going on in the wide world of sports, including the NHL and NBA playoffs going on right now. So make sure you don't miss out on that. You can find that wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I will see you all tomorrow. And as always, Skol.